Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But they love eating people. They love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. Seen a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
Whoa. Welcome back to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast.
We are back.
I am the great and powerful Mr. E.
And I am J-Clone 49. And you sound like one of them, like, southern, like...
Hallelujah!
Yeah, televangelist.
Brother, like, praise God to be you.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like the TV.
I told
preachers.
You the one time we went to an actual Southern Baptist church, didn't I?
I don't know.
I don't know. Dad, you're listening. I don't know if you remember this. We used to go down with the Davises.
Yeah.
Every year, like Easter weekend.
Okay.
To Tennessee, Gatlinburg. We'd rent a house and share it and all that. We'd go every year. And we wanted to go to church on Easter Sunday. And one church we went to was like a snake shaking church.
A what?
A snake-shaking church.
Okay, I've never heard that described like that.
They grab snakes, and they shake them so they can't bite them, and they say God's preventing the snakes from biting them. And no, it's because you're shaking the snake so hard that it's got brain damage. Anyways, that's besides the point. That it was like that. We're like, how? Like, screaming.
Yeah.
Oh, we'd never experienced that. It was great. I loved the service.
Did you get the vapors?
It was actually, the snake church was different than that one, actually.
Oh, okay.
But the Southern Baptist one was like, really loud, and you know, we loved it, but it was like
intense.
It was very intense.
Yeah,
but it was a lot of fun,
like a circus. Yeah. Intense. There you go. It took a while to find that button.
It was like four things away.
Yeah, oh, I just didn't know how long you're gonna keep laughing for.
Yeah, I was until I found it. No, so it's a very science heavy episode.
Ooh, all right.
So before we get into it, remember Patreon. We have some new cool t-shirt designs on the website. Go check them out. Get Patreon, support us. There's a bunch of extra content and exclusive t-shirts on there.
Mm-hmm. Ohio Bigfoot Jamboree.
Ohio Bigfoot Jamboree.
October 5th. Get tickets now. Yep. They're all available now.
Yep. 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 Yep.
What else?
I'm really bad with promotion.
Yeah. Ohio Bigfoot Jamboree. That's the big one. And then the other thing.
Oh, I actually have a list. Go ahead. Oh. I didn't realize I wrote a list for myself.
What, for promotions and stuff?
The Top by House stuff.
Oh, we could do it real quick. Just do it. Do it.
A t-shirt poll, if it's still open, you can go check on Facebook, or for Cryptids of the Corn podcast on Facebook. You can go see if you can vote in the t-shirt contest.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's still open by the time this airs, Bigfoot conferences. We have the Hiking Hills Bigfoot Conference the first weekend in August, where speakers come out and hang out. Then it's Squankapalooza, where speakers come out and hang out. And then it's Bigfoot and Brews, which are just going to hang out.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's Mothman, which we're just going to hang out. We'll actually be, per Patreon and listeners, we're going to be doing, I think, bus tours is kind of the plan of the TNT plant.
At Mothman Fest.
Yeah, at Mothman Fest this year, because we did that a lot last year, not with the bus, but driving people out.
But now we got a bus.
So I just like, let's just go take everybody out in the bus. We can fit 14 in the bus.
Holy crap.
So, you know, we may have to take a couple rotations, but I thought it'd be a lot of fun because people want to see like the birdhouse and where some of the sightings were.
Yeah.
Like, Linda, I don't know if you're listening to the segment, we could show them where her sighting was and stuff like that.
She'll get on the bus.
She will lead us. She will do the speaking. I already asked her the one time.
She's driving.
No, I want her to sit in a little seat and do the microphone. Oh,
okay. Good idea. Yeah.
Because, I mean, she lived there. Like, she'd seen the Mothman there.
Right, yeah.
You know. So, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Patreon, merch, all that fun stuff. All right. Real science heavy episode.
Let's get into it.
Lazarus taxa.
Lazarus taxa. Now, this ain't Lazarus the mall, the store in the mall, right?
No.
Okay.
It's based off the Lazarus Pit in ancient mythology.
Lazarus Pit?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just bring anything back to life, which is kind of what we're going to talk about.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So, Batman used it one time.
So you put things in the pit and it comes back out alive?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Like Pet Cemetery.
Yeah. And it, like Pet Cemetery, there's always bad things happened with the Lazarus Pit.
Okay.
It was like a trade thing.
Gotcha. Did not know this. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, Lazarus taxa or taxon, whichever you want to, plural is taxa. In paleontology and modern ecology, Lazarus taxa is taxon that have disappeared from one or more periods from the fossil record, only to reappear later again.
So let me say that for everyone out there listening, that in layman's terms, creatures that went extinct or disappeared from
plants,
the fossil
record? Plants, fungus, and animals, all okay. living forms.
All living life.
We're going to mostly focus on animals today. Yeah. We have some plants we're going to talk about. Because to me, it's even more impressive for a plant because they don't get the choice to get up and move.
Right, yeah.
Like, they just can't leave, right? If a volcano erupts, the plants are all screwed.
Well, but you know how they survive that, right? Their seeds develop a...
Okay. There's, not this show.
Yeah, oh, okay.
Sorry, go ahead. Re-explain Lazarus taxa.
Oh, just, yeah, basically... like you said, plant, animal, fungus, all that living life that was in the fossil record that we observed through their fossils, and then they disappear, and then lo and behold, they're back. They're just back, like they were never gone.
Which is one of the three definitions of cryptid.
Yep.
Which is, the show is about cryptids.
Cryptids, yeah.
And we've never really broken down Lazarus taxa. It's one, a really fun thing. But yeah, so...
Is would a coelacanth be an example?
Why don't we wait for examples?
Okay.
I think 90% of the show is going to be examples.
Gotcha.
So why don't we hold on to the coelacanth for a minute?
Well, I just figured that's probably the most famous guy, right?
Let's hold on.
Okay.
Because like I said off air, you may be surprised on some animals that are Lazarus taxa that we take for granted today that you don't realize disappeared from the fossil record for sometimes millions of years or tens of millions of years that are animals we still have today walking and swimming around.
Like a blue-footed booby?
Yes.
No, not them.
So Lazarus taxa is taxon that have disappeared from one or more periods of fossil record, only to reappear again later. Likewise, in conservation biology and ecology, it's referred to species or populations that have went through to be, or went once thought to be extinct and are rediscovered.
Okay.
The term Lazarus taxa was coined by Carl W. Falsa and David Jabowski in 1983. And was then explained by Jabowski in 1986. Paul Wingle and Michael Benton defined Lazarus taxa as, at times, a botanic crisis may many taxa go extinct, but others only temporarily disappear from the fossil record, often for intervals measured by millions, if not tens of millions of years, before reappearing unchanged.
Hmm.
That's the big one. Unchanged.
Okay.
Earlier works also support the concept through without using the name Lazarus taxa. So there are other people way before these guys thought this kind of thing or had this kind of definition, but they were this group of guys were the first kind of to really hammer out what it means to be Lazarus taxa.
Gotcha.
And I guess we're doing a very introductory level to Lazarus taxa today.
Okay.
Earlier works, like I said, also supported without using Lazarus taxa, the works like Christopher R.C. Paul. The term refers to the story in the Christian biblical gospel of John, in which Jesus Christ rise from Lazarus of the dead.
Okay, okay.
And then Lazarus Pit was another story that came much later.
Okay.
So plausible explanations, we're going to get into that. That kind of the big chunk of this episode is going to be all about different animals. Any questions so far?
No, I think it's pretty well explained so far.
Yes, you do know one. You know the famous one.
Well, yeah. Okay.
The coelacanth is.
I guess just confirming that makes the example.
He did not. He was not the longest one, though.
For like longest time period.
Disappeared?
Disappeared. Really?
Not even close.
Oh.
He's a big one.
Wait, does that include animals? Are you talking animals or plants?
I'm including animals.
Okay,
we're going to talk about a couple plants today.
Okay.
But we're mostly going to be focusing on animals.
Okay.
Lazarus taxa are the observable artifacts that appear to be occur either because of local extinctions, later resupplied, or sampling artifacts. So we'll define all of this. The fossil record is inherently sporadic. Only a very small fragment of organisms become fossilized. An even smaller fraction are discovered after this. They contain gaps, not necessarily caused by extinction, practically when the number of individuals in taxa are very low. Mm-hmm. So we're talking rare animals.
Right.
So let's break all this down. I just said a lot of things.
Yeah.
So the first thing is observable artifacts. So these are animals that we're using to observe. We can see when they reappear, when they disappear, through the fossil record and into modern day.
Okay.
We're going to talk a lot about modern day animals. Local extinctions are a big one. So let's say the Badlands of the Dakotas.
Okay.
Is super famous for American dinosaurs.
Right.
The Cretaceous. You know, the big monsters like the T-Rex, the Triceratops, all of that.
Right.
So but that wasn't just the only place those animals were found world.
That's just where they found their fossils.
We have a really good fossil bed.
Mm-hmm.
So if you see Triceratops, for example, disappear way earlier than most other animals,
mm-hmm.
A couple things can be happening is that fossils are really rare. Less than 1% of animals that die and become trapped fossilize.
Right.
And then less than 1% of those are found.
Yeah, exactly. Which is crazy.
There's just been a lot of animals on the planet, so that's why we find a lot of fossils.
What is it, 99.9?
99.9% of animals are undiscovered.
Just completely undiscovered?
From the Earth's history.
Oh, okay. Gosh.
Of all animals.
So even more of that have been extinct and...
never fossilized.
Yeah, yeah.
And most of those can be locally rare animals.
Right, yeah.
So if we look at mountain lions in natural environments, are going to be the lowest abundant animal in their environment.
Okay.
Because they're apex predators.
So right.
The higher up on the food chain you go, generally speaking.
The less of you there are.
The less of you are. An exception for that would be like grizzly bears.
Okay.
Giant opportunistic feeders.
Okay.
They don't care if it's a whale carcass. They don't care if it's salmon, an elk.
Or
a moose, or a wolf, or you. You know, so grizzly bears, that's why they have high abundancy.
Yeah.
Even though they're apex, quote unquote, predators. But when you look at mountain lions, they're only apex predators.
Right. They only eat animals.
There's some examples of them eating carrion, which is dead carcasses.
Okay.
But that's very rare, and most of the time those animals are either very elderly or very sick.
Okay.
It's not a thing that they're really designed to eat and handle.
Or want to.
They're like us, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's where bears are more like a dog.
They'll eat whatever.
Yeah, they don't care. You know,
yeah.
I've literally seen eating very rotten things.
It's like disgusting.
Whale carcasses are about the worst. Because by the time they get to the shore, they're just globs of hairy fat.
Oh, yeah. It's just so gross.
And they're just bears in there just like, this is the best day ever.
And I've seen my dog eat his own poop. So,
So
bears and dogs, very similar.
That's how you can show two different apex predators and their abundancy difference. So why we have tons of actual T-Rex fossils, most of them are incomplete. You know, Sue is a famous one and stuff like that. One of the more complete ones. There's actually a male now that was more complete than Sue.
Really?
Yeah.
What's his name?
I think Terrence.
That's a cool one.
Mm-hmm. Because Sue was named after the lady that found it.
Right.
Which we will do an episode on.
Right.
Bone Wars and modern day Bone Wars.
I feel like we talked about this already. But
we have, and the government swooped in and stole it.
Okay.
And because right now there's a Stegosaurus that's going up for auction. It is the most complete Stegosaurus ever, including skin and color indentations.
Holy moly.
But it's owned by a private collector, a private paleontologist, and he's selling it. He dug it up on his land.
Yeah.
He cleared the skeleton. He found it. And he's selling it. And it's probably going to go to a private collector.
Yeah.
And a bunch of the paleontological community is extremely mad at him.
Because?
They feel it should be going to the public collection.
Mm.
Do not share your... We'll do a whole episode on that. Because I have very different opinions than most paleontologists.
What are you going to say? That it's going to get taken from you?
No, it's his.
I mean, if you shared it publicly.
What, my opinion?
No. His Stegosaurus skeleton.
It's shared publicly. Everybody knows he has it.
Okay.
He's selling it on auction.
Not to the public.
Anybody can buy it. A museum, if they have the money, they could buy it. A private collector could buy it and give it to a museum. A private collector could buy it for their personal collection.
So what are you saying you shouldn't do?
A bunch of paleontologists are saying that they should rush in and take the skeleton for public domain.
Okay, so he shouldn't get his...
He wouldn't get any money, and they would just take it from him, like they did with Sue.
Why?
Because it's a discovery that's like public domain, right? I do not agree with this. I think it's his.
Yeah.
Whether he wants to be in... I think he should donate it, but that is his choice.
Absolutely, yeah.
But... Like, Sue was taken, and that was a big fight.
Yeah, and that was wrong.
Yes, I agree. I'm just saying a lot of the community is saying that, because it has so many scientific implications, because it is literally, like, there's skin on this, you know, Stegosaurus, and nobody's really got the chance to really go through it.
How's that possible?
Like, heavily armor-plated dinosaurs, their skin was a lot tougher.
Yeah, but still.
It made impressions.
We're talking millions of years.
Are we?
Like actual skin tissue or?
No. None of it's real, right? It's all bone.
That's right.
It's all
fossilized rock. Okay. Never mind.
Skin imitations and color.
Much more sense. Okay.
Anyways, okay. So locally extinct. So animals' abundancy can be a big factor in this.
Yes.
Highly common animals like T-Rex. Well, we think because T-Rex is the largest land carnivore we've ever discovered.
Right.
Why they were probably so abundant as adults is probably because they were like grizzly bears.
Just eating anything.
They were probably just the greatest hunters.
Yeah.
As they were of scavengers.
Yep.
So that's probably why they were so abundant. When you see some smaller, medium-sized carnivores were much rarer, because when T-Rex was around, it was his carcass.
Yeah, it's his.
It was his carcass.
Yeah, exactly.
And he could bully you off. And there's some paleontologists that think that's all adult T-Rexes did. I don't think so. I think they were very apt hunters. But I think they were like grizzly bear, where
mostly
if there's
bullied.
A carcass,
yeah.
I'm going to take that carcass.
Yeah, mine now.
Big animals have done that. Forever.
Since the dawn of time.
So like your rare, like your other animals, like Allosaurus and some of these medium-sized carnivores of their time were less abundant than some of the bigger carnivores. And that's why that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What was my next thing? Later resupplied. So you can have areas that didn't fossilize well. So let's say you have like this one valley that fossilized really well, you know, had rivers and with a lot of muck. So a lot of the animals that died end up in the rivers.
Yeah.
And they got buried by muck. They had a mass extinction event. So, like, all the stegosaurs disappeared from this valley.
Mm-hmm.
Other valleys farther away still had stegosaurs.
Right.
So there can be millions of years of gap in that valley.
Right, yep.
And then stegosaurs can come back. So stegosaurs as a species didn't go extinct. But if that's your only snapshot into that time period,
exactly.
It looks like they fully went extinct.
Exactly, yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
I just want to break this all down for everybody to understand.
I think you're doing a good job.
So the fossil record is inherently sporadic, like we already explained, contains gaps caused by extinction. Low numbers of individuals, that's the big one, is why some animals, like so we have tons and tons and tons of triceratops.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were giant herd animals that weighed 10 tons. There was a lot of them.
Right.
And Hadrosaurs are one of the most common fossils of like...
What
the duck-billed dinosaurs, one of the duck-billed dinosaurs.
Okay.
Because they lived in massive herds, like wildebeest or buffalo or bison.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, in a couple... million years or so, wildebeest, the largest migration of land on the planet, we're going to have a lot of their fossils because they get killed in rivers by crocodiles and, you know, buried in the river bottoms. There's literally probably whole zones that are just going to be like, they're going to dig up. There's just going to be hundreds of wildebeest carcasses.
Right, yeah.
They're going to be like, what, you know, it's just like that. After mass extinction, such as the Permian-Triassic extinction event, the Lazarus effect occurred for many taxa.
Okay.
So you remember when we did mass extinction, so this is a good pairing for that. You know, the Permian-Triassic extinction is when the world ended. You know, 97-98% of all life, all animal life.
It was gone. Yeah.
So there was millions of years, as far as the fossil record's concerned, where a bunch of animals then reappeared later. So they were probably in such isolated communities.
You're not finding their fossils anywhere.
And then they finally repopulated.
Right.
You know, we're talking, everybody, that's one of my favorite episodes we've ever done, because I like... The idea of math. No, I don't like the idea. I just like explaining this stuff
where
people understand it a little better. Because I don't think people understand the Permian-Triassic extinction event.
How bad it was?
97-98% of life died.
Right. Like
including insects, fast. Which is, there's only two mass extinctions that have ever affected insects. This one and the one that's going on right now.
Yeah. Which is crazy to think about.
Which is insane for insects because they normally do not care.
Right.
Radiation level spike, whatever.
Right.
We don't live long enough to.
I just thought you liked discussing and thinking about mass extinctions.
Yeah, there you go.
That's the evil side.
However, there appears to be no link with the abundance of fossil flora sites in proportion to the Lazarus taxa. And no missing taxa have been found partially resurfacing. Therefore, reappearances of Lazarus taxa probably reflect the rebound after the period extreme rarity during the aftermath of such extinction. Just basically saying that it's not like, it's just saying that these animals are probably surviving in isolated pockets for millions of years until they repopulate enough to resupply areas with fossil beds.
Right.
Most of the planet is not good for fossils.
Okay.
I want to make that very clear. We have this idea that paleontologists have a complete picture of environments, and they do not.
At all.
And most paleontologists will admit that. You just don't get to talk to them.
Right.
You get to see the documentaries that we've talked about. The big problem with most science today is not scientists. It is the production team. It is the admin team that are not scientists that run the feeding out of information.
Exactly. That's how they display the information, yes. Basically.
So I always stick up for scientists, because most scientists are like, they do not, like, you know, they're not these crazy people that are in dogma.
Right. They're just digging up
the academic side, you know, the guys that run the places.
They're just digging up seeds and, you know, and counting them.
Well, let's talk about some related but distant concepts.
Okay.
An Elvis taxa, like the singer.
Okay.
Is a lookalike that has speculated from extinct taxa through convergent evolution.
Uh-huh.
Because Elvis has Elvis has a bunch of lookalikes.
Oh, yeah.
So that was kind of a fun thing. Paleontologists can be fun. Scientists can be fun.
That's a good one.
A couple ones. This is a bird, a rail on a rock outcrop has re-evolved.
Okay.
So basically, there's a reef outcrop on the Atlantic Ocean. It's a type of rail, which for anybody who doesn't know, it's a wading bird.
Okay.
This rock outcrop was just barely, the top of the reef was just out of water. Just barely.
Okay.
So these birds had very little land to lay eggs, but tons of food, because they could walk in the water, they could dive a little bit and stuff like that. So the edge of this reef, most of it was like a foot underwater. So they actually had tons of space for them to hunt. Very little space for them to reproduce.
Above the water.
There was a massive storm system that wiped out everything. So all these birds went extinct.
Okay.
A cousin of theirs made it back to this after and re-evolved into almost the exact organism.
Wow.
I mean, talking the bones and everything looked identical. This would be an Elvis taxa, or they are not the same species, but due to the niche restrictions and them being very closely related.
Yes.
They looked alike very quickly.
So now, who's to say, though, that at some point before those ones, you know, got caught up in the storm system and went extinct, what if before even them, it was that same creature that came back, you know, and converged into that creature? What if that's what happened the first time?
It probably is.
Yeah.
No, they're very genetically related.
Okay.
So it most likely is what happened. It's probably the same group population stranded on the island multiple times.
Right. So now it's reestablishing.
Yes. But it's just impressive that they so genetically on land, they're still marching forward.
Yeah.
But they still re-evolve into the almost exact same thing.
Yeah.
Because the conditions are really, really specific.
Right.
So it's like a cookie cutter. If this species of bird makes it to this island, this is what it will look like in a few generations, relatively speaking.
What if all animals are just constantly going through that process?
Yeah, they are.
All the time.
They are. It's called adaptation.
We've always had the same animals here all the time. It's just
they're
going through their different cycles of what they appear like to suit the environment in which we live in at the moment.
Yes.
Huh.
That is the theory of adaptation.
So that means if that's true, that means all those animals then existed.
But, yeah, sure.
Including humans. Which would then disprove the thought of evolution.
Well, we're going to do a whole episode on
the
theory of evolution. Believe me.
I mean, as far as animals turning in the new animals and then branching out into
that is adaptation, a part of the theory of evolution.
Yeah. But don't they have to evolve from one creature to another in evolution?
They are. Because they are genetically distinct. They are phenotypically in...
Yeah, but I would say
genotypically
like
distinct.
Like a cat didn't derive from some common ancestor that a dog, you know, there's something where they shared somewhere along the line.
If you go far enough back, everything has a common ancestor.
Yeah, I don't believe that.
And there's the, whatever, last common ancestor, lease, or whatever it's called.
I don't believe it.
That's fine. You don't have to. I'm just saying that is that theory.
Gotcha.
You don't have to believe anything you don't want to. I'm just saying that is that theory. You're just, kind of explaining it a little differently,
okay,
but similar.
Gotcha. All right.
Zombie taxa.
There we go.
Is a taxa that contains specimens that have been collected from stray young than the extinct of or the, from the extinction of the taxa. Later, such fossils turn out to freed from the original steam and refossilized in younger sediment. Does that make sense?
No.
Okay. I'm going to explain it. For example, a trilobite gets eroded out from the Cambrian age limestone.
Okay.
So the actual trilobite fossil gets eroded out of the limestone rock from the Cambrian period,
right,
where it was from, gets reworked into the Mesozoic age sandstone. Because that is compressed rock.
So it's an old fossil
that gets broken out
into a new rock.
Yes.
And becomes a new fossil, but it's
the same fossil in younger strata.
Yes.
So that's how it's false, essentially.
Yeah.
Lazarus taxa.
Okay.
So it's like the trilobite is the best example because they find them in Mesozoic age siltstone,
mm-hmm,
because there is limestone right next to it, mm-hmm, from the mountains. So they erode out and they come in nodules.
Yeah, little nodes. Yeah.
And they slide down and they get in the bottom of these rivers because of rocks. And they kind of, you know, and then they re-solidify back into this new stone.
Yeah.
So it's how you can have an old piece get
that's crazy.
Well, that's what, you know, it's one of these things where we talk about these artifacts and stuff like that.
Out of place artifacts.
Yeah. Next one I have is living fossils as an extinct taxa that appears to have changed so little over time. It is relatively the same animal.
Mm-hmm.
My one for you is the hellbender, 150 million years old, according to conventional evolution. And it is identical.
How in the heck they find one of those fossilized? That is one heck of a find.
Yeah. Living fossils may occur regularly in the fossil record, such as Lamprechel linguis. The living species of the genus are not identical to fossil brachiopods, it's a bivalve. It's a mussel.
Okay.
Other living fossils, however, are also Lazarus taxa, like the coelacanth.
Hey.
So there is tons of overlap in these also.
Okay.
The zombie taxa is one that has confused a lot of people for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense, though.
And it's very weird. Like, when you see a trilobite, trilobites were the most numerous animal on the planet for a long time. They died in a mass extinction, and we talked about it in the mass extinction episode. Probably why they didn't bounce back is probably as younger, newer species were much better, and that mass extinction gave them the chance to get the foothold.
Yep.
So by the time the trilobites were trying to bounce back,
they couldn't reestablish.
All the niches were gone.
Yep.
Before we continue on to species, we're going to get to the actual species of things. We're going to do our ad. Are you ready?
Oh, yes. I'm starving. I want something that sounds tasty.
Sounds tasty? All right. Here, you ready?
Yep.
So, Jay, I just heard the Flavors of the Forest crew just did an expedition to the Lovelock Caves.
In Nevada?
Home of the red-haired giants.
Oh, did they discover a red-headed giant?
Nope. They discovered something even better.
A ginger of another sort?
A ginger of another sort. Now coming out very soon. Flavors of the Forest, Bigfoot Breath with ginger.
A ginger flavor to add to my food?
Yes. It's coming very soon. Be on the lookout for these new flavors. Helped develop by maybe the Nephilim, maybe the Mountain Elders. All we know is they had red hair and they're gingers.
And it's delicious. And you can find this flavor and the other flavors on flavorsforest.com/corn. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing some more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she's decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over the 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. My dog Grace loves it. She just gobbles it up. Go check out Badlands Ranch. You can get there at badlandsranch.com/corncrew and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to BADLANDSRanch.com/corncrew today.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
And we're back.
What a good ad.
We get a lot of good comments about the ads.
Do we?
Yeah. Tons of them.
All right.
So we're going to go through a big group of animals. You've heard of, some you haven't, that are Lazarus taxa. You ready for the first one?
Yeah.
And I want you to just tell me if you heard of them or haven't. I'll be really surprised if you heard of this first one. But this is a really common one as far as people that research Lazarus taxa. The Bermuda petrel.
Bermuda petrel?
Mm-hmm.
Was that BP oil spill?
Yes. That's funny.
That's what brought him back.
Petrel the seabird, not oil coming out of the bottom of the ocean. A dramatic rediscovery of the Bermuda petrel has become one of the most inspirational stories for history and nature conservation. These birds were believed to be extinct for 330 years, which the last sighting was 1620.
Wow.
Then in 1951, 18 nesting pairs were found on a remote rocky island in Castle Harbor, Bermuda. Even so, they are still battling with extinction today. And the global population is just a little over 250 individuals.
Huh.
They're one of the rarest seabirds in the world.
Wow.
And one of the rarest vertebrates as well.
That's all. I heard our friend Ralph's going down there to vacation to get some photos of him.
Yeah, he's probably got them in his pocket. A peccary.
Peccary. I've heard of a peccary. Why?
A Carnian peccary. Peccaries are a cousin of pigs.
Okay.
It's the largest bite-sized species of peccary, a beast that resembles a pig but hails from a whole different continent and cannot be domesticated. The peccary, this Carnian peccary, I'm not saying that word right, but
okay.
It's the first word.
Okay.
Was first described in 1930, and was based only off of fossil records, and was believed to be completely extinct.
Okay.
Then in 1975, surprising researchers discovered one alive on Cara region in Portugal. Today, there were around 3,000 individuals known. Found also in southern Brazil and Bolivia. They live in hot, dry areas with thorny bushes and low-lying succulents. It's territory that's quite inhospitable to humans.
Mm.
So this was an animal only known from fossil record.
Okay.
So a peccary and like javelinas, they look like pigs. They're not technically pigs.
Are they as big as pigs? Or
this is the biggest one, like small dogs. Okay. Not like a 500-pound hog, you know, we have from Europe and Russia and stuff like that.
Okay.
Or not, you know, kind of more like warthog sized, but shorter.
Oh man, that opens up this whole new. There's a song I listened to
about peccaries.
Oh, it's a song, "The Adventures of Gregory Peccary."
There's javelinas and peccaries in North America and Central America.
Okay,
and they're pretty mean.
Yeah,
so this peccary though was only known from the fossil record.
Okay, and then where did they rediscover it?
Brazil, Bolivia.
Okay, so southern South America.
And Portugal.
That's awesome. So they refound this guy.
Yeah. Now there's 3,000 individuals known.
That's awesome. That one I did not know about.
Yeah. This next one you'll probably know.
Coelacanth?
Yeah, coelacanth.
Okay.
The coelacanth is an ancient order of fish that's believed to have completely gone extinct at the end of the Cretaceous period, some 65 million plus years ago. That was until 1938. Which one was miraculously rediscovered off the eastern coast of South Africa near the mouth of the Chernomar River. Closely related to lungfish and tetrapods, coelacanths are among the oldest living jawed fish known to existence. They can live as long as 100 years and swim up depths of 100 meters, which is around 330 feet.
That's awesome.
And now we actually have four different colonies of them.
Really?
We discovered three different species.
Wow. I did not know that.
Yeah, and it's because of their environment. Like, they used to be super widespread. Mm. They're lobed fin fish. This is argued in ichthyology, so I'm not going to make any inflammatory statements for ichthyologists.
Okay.
They are probably the last living member of their complete lineage of fish.
Wow, okay.
Tetrapods are three-legged animals. They ran the world for a very short period of time.
Okay.
And then went extinct, replaced by like lobe fin fish, which lobe fin fish have the conventional fin array, but their fins actually have like arms inside of
them. Inside of them, okay.
And then most lobe fin fish, they just believe they evolved into terrestrial animals, like amphibians. And then the rest of them couldn't compete with more modern day fish because they weren't very fast. They weren't very efficient. You know, they were kind of that transitional species. But yeah, so they were 65 million years, completely disappeared from the fossil record. Now we have four different colonies of them found.
Are they good eating?
That's how they were rediscovered, is in a Madagascar fish market, I believe.
Wow, okay. So
I believe it was a lady scientist, too, a female scientist. And she was walking around, because that's a lot of ichthyologists will go to fish markets because that's how you discover animals.
Yeah, what's in the area?
Yeah.
Yeah.
New species all the time. The Amazon, that's where, like, Jeremy Wade always goes and looks at what's being caught. And she's, like, they're literally carting in, like, a seven-foot-long coelacanth on a cart. And she's like, do you guys get those? And they're like, yeah, we get them, you know, about twice a year or whatever. I'm like, yeah, that's been off the fossil record for 65 million years.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's a fish the size of a guy.
Yeah. You ever seen one?
Oh, gosh. No, an aquarium. I have. Mm-hmm. Don't remember what aquarium. There's an aquarium that has them in the U.S. somewhere.
Well, I saw them down in a resort. We went on like a Disney cruise when we were kids.
Maybe that's where it was.
Atlantis was the name of the.
I can't remember. I seen one when I was young.
Yeah.
And it was probably in Florida.
Yeah. That's where we were. It was
lungfish or another ancient one. There's a lungfish in the next room.
Yeah.
And then tetrapods, like I said, we're talking ancient lineages. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, some people that question the fossil time scale.
Right. Yeah.
These are good animals as examples that not only really went extinct with the dinosaurs. They were around for about 190 million years before the dinosaur reign.
Coelacanths?
In past, yes.
Wow.
Ancient fish. We're talking about the Devonian.
Yeah.
You know.
They've seen some things.
Yeah, they were around with like Dunkyloxus and stuff like that, the big armor-plated fish.
Yep.
They've been around a minute.
That's pretty awesome.
This is one of my favorite ones on this list, and it's more recent. The Lord Howe Island stick insect.
Okay.
Also called spiny tree lobsters or land lobsters.
Wait a minute. Yeah, these sound familiar.
Yeah, I've showed you a picture of them.
Okay,
sure. I'm also referring to as walking sausages. The Lord Howe stick insect is considered the rarest insect in the world by far. The once plentiful insect became prey to an invasive black rat that was thought to go extinct in the 1930s. It was only native to inhabit the Australian Lord Howe Island. In 2001, researchers found fewer than 30 individuals on a small islandette of Ball's Pyramid, the world's tallest and most isolated sea stack. So it's not even an island, it's a sea stack, which is basically a rock tower.
Okay.
They found 30 of them.
That's pretty awesome.
Living on this rock tower because they were wiped out by everything else. That's 14 miles off the coast of Lord Howe's Island. Oh my gosh.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, so 14 miles off the coast of Lord Howe's Island. That's fine.
Sorry. Sneeze attack.
No, what do you think about that one?
They do look like little, like...
They look like giant lobsters.
Yeah.
They live in the trees.
Yeah.
If you had to put a lobster on land without the claws.
Without the claws. I was going to say, it looked like without the claws, yeah.
30 of them.
That's pretty... What a find. Mm-hmm. I bet that guy was like...
So literally, it's a tower of volcanic rock. It is just a tube of rock.
Well, why was he over there anyways? That's what's funny.
Probably got blown off the island.
Yeah.
Like wind currents when they're little.
Yeah.
And there's vegetation on it too. Like there's some plants.
Oh, I meant the guy on the boat.
Just seeing what was on, you know, just doing research in the area and stuff like that.
That's what I'm saying. What are the odds you go over there and you find these extinct bugs?
I mean, yeah. The La Palma giant lizard's my next one for you. La Palma giant lizard is historically found on volcanic islands in La Palma, in the Canary Island archipelago.
Okay.
Until alleged sightings of individual lizards in 2007, the giant lizard was believed to be extinct for around 500 years. As a result, the species was upgraded from extinction to critically endangered on the red list.
Nice.
But scientists still disagree on whether there is still enough scientific evidence for its survival. Not a single living lizard has been captured. The remaining population, if any, is believed to be quite small.
So they just found dead bodies?
They had fossils of them, or bones of them.
Right.
And then people started seeing them again. Most of these individuals that seen these lizards didn't know what they were. This would be a whole like little episode we could do for a Wednesday.
Okay, but
people were like, "That's a giant lizard running around."
Yeah,
and they described it to a herpetologist. Like, well, that sounds like the ancient lizard that used to live here.
But they never had any like specimens, like actually in their hands.
No, they've been dead for 500 years.
Even dead ones, they never found rediscovered a dead
they
one.
They have like, bones,
just bones. Okay,
just bones.
Okay.
The Tuckaha, I think it's how you pronounce it in New Zealand. The Tuckaha is a flightless bird indigenous to New Zealand. They're to be extinct, and the last four known specimens were taken in 1898. However, after a careful planned search effort, the bird was rediscovered in 1948 near Lake Ona. The rarest and oddest-looking bird remains in danger today, with only 225 individuals remaining. They just started re-releasing them last year.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
They are, I think their closest living relatives is like the terror duck. From Australia and stuff like that, which is a terror bird-like animal.
Yeah.
Big axe-like bill and giant. They look like it, just smaller. Like a turkey, like not, between turkey and chicken-sized.
Okay, cool. That's awesome.
But yeah, they were thought to be extinct for a long time, mostly due to rats.
Yeah, eating their eggs and stuff. I hope they make it back.
The Cuban Solodon, which is an ancient name in itself.
Okay.
The strange-looking insectivore was so rare that only 37 specimens have ever been caught. Initially discovered in 1861, no individual was found until 1890 to 1974. Unusual among mammals, their saliva is venomous. The most recent Cuban solodon sighting was in 2003, sparking individuals get its name. I'm not even going to try to say it. It's in Cuban. It looks similar to a shrew, but as a fact, its most closely related ancestor is the Madagascar Tenerec family.
No way.
Yes, which me and Emily did on Freaky Fauna, the Tenerex,
yep,
which are ancient mammals in themselves. They're super weird, but solodonts.
Huh.
Which are really ancient mammals. They're really weird. They look like what you imagine mammals after the dinosaurs.
Yeah.
With all these freaky shapes. That's what they look like.
And these were in South America as well? As well as the...
These ones are in Cuba specifically.
Cuba. That's what it was. Sorry, my bad.
The New Caledonian Crest Gecko. Originally discovered in 1866, with long feared extinction, this unusual gecko was rediscovered in 1994, in the aftermath of a tropical storm. The oddest feature is the hair-like protrusions above the eyes and the crested gecko, or the crest that runs along its eyes to its tail. They live in treetops and can just significantly decrease, and they are nocturnal. This species was currently being assisted for its red-listed protections.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
There's some really cool ones. I have some big ones. Don't worry. I'm kind of saving them for the end.
Okay.
Like large-bodied animals.
Okay.
New Howland mouse. They were from Australia. They weren't seen. Their last one was seen, or they first discovered and last one was seen in 1846 and wasn't re-seen until 1967. So over 100 years.
Okay.
There's only been 12 individuals ever found.
Entirely?
Yeah.
That's not very many.
The giant Polaris earthworm.
Ooh.
Originally discovered in 1897, these giant worms were declared extinct by the 1980s until three specimens were unearthed. Ba-nunch.
You didn't play the button.
Well, it's like four things away. And in parts of Idaho. And these ghostly burrows can dig up to 15 feet deep, and they can grow as long as 3.5 feet long.
But didn't we talk about these guys on our Mongolian death worm episode?
Yeah. Okay. No, giant worms. We just did a whole different episode on giant worms.
Just giant worms, okay.
They're albino in appearance, and they emit a sweet fragrance.
Wow.
Which we connected with them, the Japanese giant worms.
Yeah, that's right.
They smelled like chocolate. They smelled sweet.
Yeah.
These giant worms from Idaho smell sweet. They may be extinct. They may not be. They're very, like I said, three of them have been found.
That's it.
But they were declared extinct in 1980, and they just found three of them in 2005.
Wow. Wow, that'd be awesome to have one.
The large-billed reed warbler. It's a species. I just was leaving dead air because you were your face.
Its name?
Yeah, it's called the world's least known bird. It is known only from a single specimen that was collected in 1867 and is believed to be extinct. Then in Thailand in 2006, a wild population was rediscovered and confirmed to be large-billed reed warblers via DNA matching from the original specimen.
Nice.
Today, the bird larger remains a mystery, and unfortunately, data is insufficient to assess their status.
Wow.
They found a couple of them in a bird market.
Yeah.
They're alive somewhere out there.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, the world's so big, though. And not yet. We don't have cameras everywhere yet to watch every corner of the earth. But it's so big. There's so much stuff hiding out there.
I just found out a fun little fact. You know, you go to Google Earth, whatever, and you can see the ocean and stuff like that. Uh-huh. Do you know all those flat spots?
What do you mean?
In the ocean? It looks like the bottom's flat. Like they show you some.
Oh, yes.
You know, it's not flat, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's no data.
There's just nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's less than, I think, only 50% of the data. Like the ocean has been, the bottom has been roughly mapped.
Yeah.
And that means like just basic topo.
Yeah.
You know, topography, like studies. And less than 5% of the volume has ever been like researched or discovered. Yeah. Ready for another one?
Oh, yeah.
This one's a little larger than the ones we've been talking about so far. I mean, most of the ones we talked about today you could pick up.
All right.
This one would be hard to pick up. Omar's whale.
Omar.
Mm-hmm. This is a beliform whale, which is, you know, the baleen guys, which resemble a small fin whale. Remember, small is relative when we're talking about fin whales.
Yeah.
The largest animals to ever exist.
Like whales in general.
It was only named in 2003 and was purely from one dead specimen. There was also no confirmed sightings of this species. It measured around 10 meters in length, which is 30 to 35 feet. Afterwards, suggesting it had already gone extinct after the specimen was found.
Mm.
However, though, a population of small whales, which were pale on the right-hand side and darker on the left-hand side, which is unique to this species, were discovered off the coast of Madagascar in 2013, which was later confirmed via DNA evidence to be Omar's whale.
Wow.
Or Omahar, I think is actually how you say it.
Okay.
This exciting discovery was first living specimen was reported earlier this month, which this article was written in, I believe, in 17. So, yeah. This is the whale that was rediscovered, one of the species that was rediscovered in 2017-2018.
Yeah.
Its colors are different. So most animals in the ocean are light on the bottom and dark on top. This one's left-hand side is light and its right-hand side is dark because it swims on its side to feed.
I was just going
to
ask you that. Yeah.
It's unique among all the baleen whales.
Wow.
It's very cool. Very awesome animal.
Wonder how that came about.
An animal the size of a semi-truck.
Got rediscovered.
Is a part of Lazarus taxa.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I just want to point that out.
No matter how big or small.
Yeah, and I have a whole... So I have one more, and then we can kind of just talk about some stuff. False killer whales.
Okay.
Which to me, when I was doing this, was the one that blew my mind. Because they're ubiquitous here now in modern day.
Okay. They're very common?
Everybody knows about them. Everybody goes, whale... They're known. They're a known animal. Like, they're not like the Omar's whale, the Omahar's whale, you know, where there's 10 of them.
Mm-hmm.
They're everywhere,
mm-hmm.
you know? So false killer whales were first described by British paleontologist and biologist Richard Owen based off of one skull found in 1843 in Stamford, Lincolnshire in England that dated back to the middle of the Pleistocene, around 126,000 years ago. The first carcass washed up on the shore in Coral Bay in Denmark in 1861. Until this point, the species were thought to be extinct. Keep in mind, they had been whaling for 100 years before this.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm not talking like hunting whales. Hunting is thousands of years. Commercial whaling.
Mm. Commercial hunting of the whales.
Yes. And they had never found one.
Hmm.
And they're ubiquitous. They're not like a common sight. Like,
I say, they're just smart, maybe?
They are. They're very large. They're large enough for people to mistake them for orcas.
Right, yeah. That's
they don't
big.
Have any of the white, though. They're all black.
Okay.
Like pilot whales. They have a little bit of the white. Pilot whales are almost all black. They didn't know about them.
Right.
It's one that blew my mind. Is it just, were they avoiding ships? Were their populations maybe lower until whaling was taking effect and they took some niches from other whales?
Gotten in new areas and, yeah.
They were also really fast. You know, these were pretty small for whaling. You know, these big wooden ships had a lot of trouble catching the smaller, faster whales. Like, there wasn't a lot of orcas being whaled until we got gas engines.
Yeah.
And then they started melting down orcas too.
So bad.
Yeah, whaling. Listen to our whaling episodes. Yeah, I have all kinds of... The Moroccan midwife toad was only discovered from fossil remains and then discovered to be alive in 1979.
Nice.
10 million years.
Oh, that's a long one.
Yeah, no, there's tons. Like, we can go into, like, mammals. There's some animals from 2.6 million years ago. We can go into, like, nightcap oak is a plant, and it's a tree. It was extinct. It was only known from fossils from 20 million years ago and was rediscovered in the last decade.
That's crazy that trees can come back.
Yeah. Subsimonidonts is a genus of bats that was extinct 16 million years ago and was rediscovered in 2003. Dawn redwoods, the one in I may have in my front yard.
May, allegedly.
Was extinct. It was only known from fossils after, which we talked about it, and I think Herbs and Coffee, that the reason why it was extinct is because we cut them all down.
Yeah.
But it was only known from fossils, quote unquote, and it was rediscovered alive in 1944.
By a miracle.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, from 166 million years ago, an asteroid fly originally discovered from fossil amber 115 million years ago was rediscovered in 2010 in Namibia.
A specific fly?
Mm-hmm. How about, you want to go back even further, and then we'll start talking about stuff. I know I've been going off on a rant. I like these episodes. From the Devonian, you want to talk about some ancient things. From 419 to 359 million years ago.
Okay, that's a long time.
A little bit. There was a class of mollusks believed to have gone extinct in the middle of the Devonian 800 or 380 million years ago. Until living members were discovered off the coast of Costa Rica.
Okay. The Costa Costa.
A whole class of mollusk.
What are they called, though? He didn't say the name.
I mean, it's Mona Paraca Aphylidae.
Okay. All right. I thought that was just something we'd know.
No.
Yeah.
I mean,
so
they're like, they almost look like snails.
Okay.
But they went extinct 380 million years ago. So that means they, if conventional evolutionary times, they just dodged fossilization.
Everything. Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah, literally.
They got fossilized and then they stopped forever.
That is kind of strange, ain't it?
Yeah.
Or they
makes
just
you think, doesn't it?
Or maybe they just lived in certain areas and whatever cataclysm happened, they just got, well, I don't know, because you'd think there'd still be multiple layers with that would contain them. They're still alive.
That's a long time to dodge fossilization and still be alive.
Maybe they never died.
Well, they didn't.
I'm saying, like, they never...
It's the same eight of them that's been around since the Devonian?
Yes.
That'd be fun.
That'd make more sense.
It's probably what the bloop is, then.
Yeah, it's just them.
Just growing.
Congregating. It's just growing, yeah.
The Cambrian, which is a long time ago, 539 million to 485 million years ago. An extinct Devonian member order of the Rhodiodontidae was discovered from the fossil in the Devonian period. So basically, it survived the Cambrian mass extinction event into the Devonian. It's not into modern day, but basically, it had a gap of about 150 million years in its fossil record.
Okay.
So it's only known from fossil record, but it disappeared from the fossil record for longer than dinosaurs were around and then reappeared.
Oh, cool. Okay. See, but that could be one of those things like we talked about earlier with...
Yeah, rare. But I'm just talking large amounts of time.
Right, yeah.
I'm just showing you that animals can disappear because I think that paints a picture for all of our cryptids, right? Then we talk about the bear dogs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
All these short-faced bears that we act like they died out 100 million years ago. Or not 100 million, 100,000 years ago.
Yeah.
They're nowhere around. The coelacanth made it through several mass extinctions.
Millions of years.
And disappeared without a specimen forever.
Yeah, and now we got them in aquariums.
Or, like, the peccaries.
Yeah.
You know, a mammal, a large mammal. Omar's whale.
Yeah, there you go, whale.
Was discovered. The fossils is from a whole different ocean.
I mean, the ocean, yeah, that's true, too.
The dead one, sorry, not the fossil. The dead one, from a whole different ocean.
I knew what you meant, though. Might as well be a fossil.
Yeah, but, so this, I wanted to do this episode to show... Because I think it gives validity to the word cryptid. I think that's the whole point I wanted to do this episode for. And I've been talking about it for an hour.
I think it's fair, though.
Is that we throw out these terms all the time. I mean, how many times have I given you an animal that's relatively recently extinct? And
Or locally extirpated.
Or locally extirpated. Or, you know, all these animals. And some people are like, 200,000 years? Come on, that's asinine that they survived that long without being discovered.
Yeah.
Or the animals from the Devonian.
Right.
That didn't get fossilized for 400 million, you know, all these massive amounts of time.
Can't trust the fossil record.
That's what I'm saying. Well, I'm just saying to point that animals can dodge detection.
Right, yeah.
Large animals can dodge detection for an extremely long time and then just show up one day, like the tuckas of New Zealand.
Yeah, I want to see one of them. Like, in person. Like, I want to see one.
They're large built. They look like they're straight out of the Pleistocene.
It looks like something off of a...
Ark?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a terror bird.
Yeah.
Like a small terror bird. So, what do you think? And I got more to talk about, but I'm just curious.
No, I think...
I know I talked a lot.
The points you made were very, valid and I think good to have in your mind, like, when you're thinking about this stuff. Just to know, like, the time scale with certain things, it's almost irrelevant. I mean, really?
I think it is. I mean, yeah. As far as talking about and, like, saying an animal can't be seen again.
Because
it's been extinct for 100 million years ago. Well, we have examples. And they'd be like, well, you got one. No, I literally had a list of probably 400 or 500.
Yeah.
You know, animals. And that was just from my cursory research.
And that's just from what we've actually discovered.
Yeah. So to say large animals, and I'm not talking dinosaurs, which maybe you guys will hear about more relatively soon. But there are animals that dodge whole families we talked about. Whole family groups have reappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you could say maybe, like, what could cause Lazarus taxa that's besides animals just dodging extinction and hiding? You know, we talk about time slips a lot.
Right.
And that maybe were portals in time. And maybe time's not the same thing we think about, where it's one straight arrow and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always kind of felt that time for us as people inside the tunnel is just a straight tunnel.
Right.
When you're outside, like I've talked about it with like the paper towel tube. That's the flow of time.
Okay.
When you're in it, you can't see outside it. You're inside the tube. You can only, like a hose. It's only pushing you forward.
Yep, one way.
From the outside, you could have little tubes that are connecting ancient areas to modern day areas or vice versa, you know. So you can have these species reappear. That could be what's happening.
Okay.
You know, that's surviving all these mass extinctions is insane. But if there's time tubes, essentially, where animals specifically, and we talked about living pterosaurs, and we, you know.
A little more plausible, you're saying?
I'm saying that could be an explanation. Mm-hmm. I think animals just survive, too.
There's that, too.
I think some animals are tougher than you look at, and people, like these little mollusks. You know, when you're basic, and your needs are basic, like when we talked about crocodilians versus mosasaurs.
Yeah.
Why did crocodilians survive mass extinctions and mosasaurs didn't? Well, not all the crocodilians did.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that had slow metabolisms. The ones that, you know, were very simple-esque in their their daily needs made it. And the more complex ones, like Caprosuchus, you know, the jungle cat crocodilian, went extinct because it was more like a jungle cat. And when the mass extinction event happened, those niches weren't there.
They weren't available anymore.
When you're a crocodile and you can lay in a puddle of mud for a year and a half and eat once a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, you rock it a little harder.
You can, withstand some things.
And mosasaurs, you know, having probably being warm-blooded and probably being at least some kind of warm-blooded semblance. They may not be what we classify as mammal warm-bloodedness. Like more like a leatherback sea turtle, like we talked about. You know, they are essentially warm-blooded. They have homeostasis.
Mm-hmm. Homeostasis.
Homeostasis. Yeah. Same thing.
Right, yeah, I know. Sorry.
I don't care. So they rock these things better. So would that make more sense is these time slips where the Earth is much more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Life is much more complicated than we've ever imagined.
Absolutely. What are your thoughts? Or than we've ever been taught.
What? I don't think it's anybody's fault when you talk about that style. I don't think anybody knows.
Well, no, I know. But we are also taught like to rein your imagination in when it comes to that area, like to box it in
to a
certain degree.
Subatomic physicist, everybody hates him.
Because they just say what...
Because it breaks all the rules. Once you look at small things. I texted you an episode idea today, Mysteries of the Universe, which will probably be in season 6. Because I have a little list I've been writing.
Okay.
Like, do you know, and this is a weird one, and this is way off topic, because we're in studio and I'm having fun, that there is light is released when a human egg cell is fertilized.
Yes, I've seen that. Why did I just see that?
Like, it's been going around recently.
Okay, that's why.
But it's been known since I think the 80s.
Like a little flash of light?
Yeah.
When conception happens.
They think it's zinc.
Yeah, that's what I read.
They do not know what causes it, though.
Yeah.
And here's my thing is people research it and they say, well, it's zinc. And that's where people stop. Like, oh, they explained it. No, they didn't explain it.
Right.
There is no reason why a zinc reaction is happening on the skin of the egg during inception.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows why light is produced.
Does it just happen with human embryos?
No, it happens. It's just human embryos are the most studied.
Yeah.
So,
As
far as I know, I think it happens with some other mammals, but I don't think it happens with everything. I know humans is the big one where it's a big flash.
Hmm.
But it's odd, isn't it? That's a mystery. And like the double slit experiment will
be in
there.
Is it though?
As far as conventional, you know, study is.
Which conventional science is.
Which.
Slow.
I mean.
Misrepresented.
Well, I think it just, it's hard to, for every, all these scientists on a planet to come to a consensus.
Right. You got to put your political and ideological dogma up front and first.
Well, that's like you're talking about. A lot of scientists don't care.
I know. I'm just being facetious.
A contrarian.
I know that too.
Yeah, it's going to be the next shirt. Contrarian. But time slips.
No, we've talked about it countless times with some of the explanations for some cryptids, some dinosaurs, some northern Yukon dinosaurs running amok.
Oh, the Partridge Creek beast.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just, I don't know. When we did the cave bear episode, and we had some people message us and say that there's no way that an animal that size could survive. Like, people don't understand
how big the world is.
How big the world is. Or we did the Stellar Sea Cow episode.
Yeah.
Or we did Living Mammoth, which I think is a Patreon episode, that the areas, the planet is not packed. I know when you live in the city and you live in these areas, the planet feels small.
Mm-hmm.
The planet feels overcrowded.
Mm-hmm.
There are massive swaths of land and water.
With nobody.
With nobody.
Yeah.
That have never been seen.
Yeah.
By human eye.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, when we're talking the last 100,000 years.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, we're talking the Yukon, the Siberia, the open ocean. People have, and we've talked about that hundreds of times on the show already, that people have this misconception that the ocean is well-traveled.
Yeah, not at all.
Cargo ships, cruise ships stay in shipping lanes. Because if you get out of that, you will not be seen again.
Nope, and disappear.
Like, if you break down, like they found that, remember we talked about it in the Bermuda Triangle, that ghost cruise ship that disappeared for 5 years.
Yeah.
Just floated back into Bermuda.
Everyone's still alive, right?
Yeah. No. And then, or that whole house, like a whole house that was in the ocean that floated to Bermuda. Like, it's just, there's weird things.
It's very.
So I think Lazarus Taxa is a great way of mixing the science and the paranormal.
Yeah.
When you look at, like, bear dogs and short-faced bear and Megalodon, even if I don't believe that some of those made it to modern day. But to say that it's just because the time scaling is why they didn't make it to modern day.
It's not a good, valid excuse. Yeah.
When other large animals
did
have shaken off mass extinctions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anything to add?
No, this has been a good one. I like this one.
Oh, good. I have been the great and powerful Mystery.
And I've been J-Clone 49.
We'll catch you next week, guys.
Bye. Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Cryptids of the Corn podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J-Clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye!
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.